Now, in module two of this program, we spent some time with Dr. Peter Fonagy. He showed us how a client's fault-finding mindset was often linked to an inability to mentalize. And as we mentioned, mentalizing means being able to attend not just to our own experience, but also to the mental state of another. So, how can we help to restore a blame-prone client's ability to mentalize? Here, Peter walks us through the steps that he uses.
We start from a narrative, the narrative of an event. And that narrative is an experience at the time. So it's they tell me about a particular thing that happened with the husband or their wife. Let me tell, let me think of a young man I've seen fairly recently, and he was telling me about an encounter that he had with his sort of girlfriend. I don't know whether the girlfriend would call him her boyfriend, but he likes to refer to her as a girlfriend. There was something that happened that he came in complaining about, which really was about her them being at a party and she took, as far as he was concerned, too much interest in this other person who actually came in late. And anyway, so I would want him, first step number one, he tells me this is what happened, that he felt that she wasn't, she had lost interest in him, and I then asked him what his experience of it was at the time, and he says, well, he felt pushed out, neglected, angry with this guy, and then I ask him, as he reflects back on it, what was really happening there? What could she be thinking, and what was the nature of that? And then he, then tells me about how she was obviously fancying this guy more than kind of had a, maybe even a crush on him or something. There was more to it than, and that's why he felt the experience was so crushing. Then I would, as a next step, I would say, well, when you think about it now, do you still think that that was what was happening? How do you see it from our perspective now? Why do you see it? And then, then he experiences a little bit more doubt, that he's not so certain about it. Maybe, maybe he was a bit of a loner, and maybe she took an interest in him because he didn't know anyone at the party, and she wanted to be friendly to him, and so on. So it started developing an alternative perspective. Then I ask him, how do you feel about, what's it like talking about it now? And he says, well, it's sort of helpful. It kind of makes me think about what might be happening. And then I come in and say, is it, that it just moved in so quickly, that thought of yours, that he he was trying to steal your place, that moved in so quickly, really before any other thought could, and you reacted to that, and you know, you walked away and went into half, and then she and you had an argument. It's, you know, and it may be now, it seems like it may not have been necessary. Am I right about that? And then, you know, you've got an alternative perspective.
So just to make sure you've got them all, let's recap Peter's steps. First, you start with the narrative. Get the client to think of a particular event or experience and have them go into detail about the experience at the time that it happened. Next, you move the client into the reflective phase. Have them reflect on the current feelings that come up as they talk about the past event in the here and now. And then also, reflect on the therapeutic part of what's being revealed in those current feelings. By this point, the client is often more open and ready to consider an alternative way of looking at the same experience. Now, in addition, there's one more nuance to Peter's process that I think is also very important. I'll let Peter explain.
You try and do a little bit of watching what's happening as well. So you're keeping attention on if there's a disjunction in the tone, in the dialogue between what's declared about it, say that it was an experience of abandonment and so on and so forth, and how they talk about it, you know. So it's with this young man, very often it happens that he talks about these negative experiences, but actually it somehow comes across as if he felt some kind of, in his tone, as if some kind of triumph about it almost, that he felt, you see, here, you know, you see again, it's happening. So I might pick it up and then just kind of say, well, look, just what's happened just then? You know, you said something really sad, but, you know, to me, you sounded as if you were almost pleased about it. How come there are these two things? Now, the importance of it, again, is not the particular disjunction, but by finding disjunctions, forcing my client to mentalize about their own reaction. And then tracing how it came about, trying to see if we can understand why it came about. All these things are just enormously important in my view, because it is what helps an individual develop a mentalizing attitude.
So as Peter watches and listens, he stays alert for inconsistencies in a client's narrative. He then empathizes, he clarifies, and he explores. He identifies the client's feelings, and then he parses the subtleties of his client's experience in terms of the client's narrative. Why?
Because that gets a little bit of mentalizing going. You know, a really important part of it is really provoking curiosity in him about why he might be doing the things that he's doing, to try and get his interest to come alive in his own mental states. It's incredibly important to validate and to normalize and to try and see things through his eyes and to try to see what effect the experience has on them. So it has a structure, quite a detailed structure. But on the whole, the aim of it is really very, very simple. And that's actually makes for a very, rapid, sometimes very limited therapy. So, you know, I'm not there to sort out every single problem that this person has. I'm just sorted, you know, I'm there to be respectful, to be positive, to be hopeful, to be questioning, but to be naive, to be unknowing, to be puzzled, to be a bit like Inspector Columbo, if you remember back that TV series, you know, I wonder why that's happening. In order to invite the person I'm working with to be forced to help me by mentalizing themselves. And then always to check back, to keep them on side with me. Did I understand that right now? Come on, help me here. I might have misunderstood. And with this young man I was just talking about, I do that a hell of a lot because he's incredibly incredibly wants to please and is incredibly likely to agree with me. Just nod my, you know, nod me through my little speeches, and then I know this is kind of water for duck's back. He didn't really internalize anything I said. So I go quite slowly. I always check back whether we really understood. I get him to repeat it to me, and then I say, but you know, what's the effect of that? If you think about it like that, how does it change how you feel? And it's not for any particular reason other than it's encouraging his mentalizing. And if I feel he's mentalizing, I praise. I'm filled with admiration and try and get him to see the difference, the improvement that occurs if he sees things genuinely in terms of his girlfriend's stance on something, as opposed to his assumptions about his girlfriend's stance, that he's all too quick to attribute to.
So how might we language such praise with a client? Ask Peter to give me a snapshot of how he does this. Here's what he said to this client.
I think this time you've really managed to understand what went on between you. Now, it struck me like that. Did it strike you like that? Good. Now, did it make a difference? Because I think you did fantastically well. But did it make any difference for you? Did it make it feel any different? Did it make it feel worse?
He
goes home and tries to kind of live the dream, as it were, and does mentalizing with his girlfriend, and he comes back and says they talked about, you know, that he what she thought at the time when he felt that she was answering this person's text too quickly, which meant that, you know, he didn't matter, that the conversation between him and her didn't matter as much as this person's text mattered to her. And she then explained that actually she was very worried about this other person because they were upset about their girlfriend doing something, and that's okay. So, how did that feel like? Did you feel any better when she explained that to you? Did you feel any better about it? Because, you know, I thought that was really good, the way that you actually made sure that you had a good understanding of what she felt. Do you think she felt better for being able to explain it to you? I think it's really good that you can make her now feel good about conversations with you. Because before, it was so often that you get into a conversation with her and you explain, try to explain how you felt, and it just made things worse. But I think now that you can listen to her better, I think you're doing so much better. We're not doing anything extraordinary here, but we are very focused and very combative, in relation to non-mentalizing Phyllis. So when he talks to me about the assumptions that he makes about what she thinks or what she, I could say, look, it's so easy to make these assumptions, but how often do you check those things out with her? Do you check them out? You're so often convinced that you're right, but if you were so right all the time, you'd be an extraordinary person. Because none of us can read each other's minds. So I would be much happier if you told me about times when you got her mind wrong, because then I'd know that maybe the times when you say that you got her mind right, that had a fair chance of being true. But if all the time you're right, I can't help feeling I don't know that you're right that often, and I just don't know when you're right and when you're wrong. So, quite confrontative, not letting people get away with non-mentalizing. If I hold myself to task here, so if he comes back, look, I did exactly what you said and it didn't help at all. I'm really sorry. Obviously, if it was of no practical value to you, it was wrong. It was my fault and I apologize. Something I did wasn't quite right. But let's together try and make sure that next time it doesn't go wrong. What happened? Let's go into what happened. And then we go into how it happens.
I think Peter's story is so important. Not only does it lay out the exact steps for helping clients mentalize, but it also helps us see how mentalizing could be especially useful in working with clients who are prone to blame. It's one powerful way to start shifting a blamer's focus while still taking care to keep the therapeutic alliance intact. Now, coming up in the fourth and final bonus, we'll get into how the practitioner can guard against getting caught up in the client's blaming stance. I'll see you there.